Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Oh, lots of interesting, important articles on the website today. Absolutely visit it. And, get an eyeful, to say the least. My guest today is Jamila El-Shafi. Oh, I want you to know about Jamila. Jamila is an artist. She's a longtime social justice and environmental activist and an organizer. And I never knew about Jamila until somebody mentioned her to me and what she's been involved with. And I was absolutely excited, and I invited her on because I wanted to share her victory with my listeners. Oh, we need to know about this to inspire others to do the same thing. In June 2008, Jamila founded Save Our Water to mobilize citizen opposition to the Nestle Corporation, biggest food company in the world. Their corporation's proposed expropriation, call it theft, of the Kennebunkport, Maine's Wells Water District groundwater. Bit of a tongue twister. She mounted a successful campaign to table Nestle's proposal indefinitely. And on top of that, the town of Sharpley passed a rights-based ordinance, along with saving the water, stripping corporations of their personhood. We'll talk about that in the program, and restoring local power to the community. Jamila, are we connected?
Yes. Hi, Stephen. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you on. No, when I heard about your story, I was awfully excited because I just want to replicate this around the country. It shows that, that citizen action, ordinary people like you, Jamila, can move a mountain. You can go up against the Nestle Corporation with all of the power and money and influence they have and beat them.
Yeah, it's very exciting. We're still riding high in Maine. And this coming Saturday, there's going to be another special town meeting in a neighboring town who's also going to vote on a rights-based ordinance. And I feel very confident that that will pass.
Okay, are you talking about Wells?
No, we're talking about Newfield. And Wells will be voting on the same type of ordinance in June. So we are very, very excited about this, and we feel that, you know, this type of success should be spreading all over the country. I think a lot of people have interest.
Well, I'm spreading it all over the world.
Absolutely.
The entire world can tune into this program and hear about this. People outside the U.S. don't know anything about our corporate personhood, but we'll explain it to them during the program. It's a very, very important issue here.
You're quite the expert.
No. I'm not an expert. I have written about it a few times, and I will explain it later in the program. It's big. It's really, really big. We need to ban it across the whole country, but we'll talk about that. By the way, we have four commercial breaks. When we hear soft music, it means one's coming, and I'll interrupt, and then we'll come back. But, we've got a few seconds. Oh, there it goes. There it goes. We'll break and for a commercial, and then we'll come back. And then you tell the story about what you did for Sharpley, for Kennebunkport, for Wells. Oh, it's a terrific story. We ought to make a movie out of it.
there is going to be a movie.
We're going to make a movie?
There is actually a movie in the works.
I'll let you explain that, too.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Jamila El-Shafi. We're talking about the battle won by three small towns in Maine against the biggest food corporation in the world, and we're talking about the community's water that the Nestle Corporation wanted to steal and make a profit out of it. Oh, Jamila, the story is very exciting. Just one comment, and then you begin and tell the story that you wrote about in an article that you call Maine Communities Reject Corporate Control. I think key to understand besides your victory is that people in the know think that the next battle, there's a big battle to control the world's oil right now, but a bigger battle looms to control the world's water. We'll figure out a replacement for oil whenever it runs out. I can't imagine who's going to come up with a solution to replace water. Fresh water is it's depleted. Unless they come up with a cheap way to desalinize, they haven't done it yet. Maybe they will, but they certainly haven't done it yet. But fresh water is being depleted. It's being wasted terribly, just terribly. But you tell this glorious story that you wrote about, Jamila.
Thank you, Stephen. Well, for a long time, corporations and the rich have thought of Maine as their playground, so to speak. You know, they come in, they have taken our lumber, clear cut. Their paper mills have polluted our rivers. Back in the 70s, our rivers were running really dark brown and foamy on top. So, you know, battling corporations in Maine is not new. But what is new is that we have reached a tipping point because now the battle is about water, you know, our most precious resource. And as you have just said, Maud Barlow, that the next wars will be fought over water because it is a scarce resource. There's a global crisis right now. And even in this country, we have shortages, droughts of water in California, in Texas, the Southwest. And they said the climatologists are predicting that the entire country will have a very dry season, probably the driest season since the 30s. But to tell you a little bit about the history of this fight, my husband and I saw a small press release in our paper in June talking about our local water district getting ready to sign a contract with Nestle. And we were shocked. We thought, why haven't we heard about this? This is our natural resources, and they're going ahead without the consent of the public when it's our resource. So that was on a weekend, and I said to my husband, go down to the water district and get a copy of their contract and their charter. Well, we did. And when we read it, we were absolutely shocked. The contract looked like Nestle's lawyers had written everything for Nestle. It was going to pit people against Nestle because if there was any litigation, our water district was signing away their right to defend us. They had to side with the water district, with the Nestle Corporation. It was just the most horrible contract, and it was so embarrassing as well because it didn't appear that our water district superintendent had even read it when we met with them. So what we did is we called for a town meeting. We took it upon ourselves to start a democratic process here because it had clearly been subverted. So I called for a little press conference in my house, brought some media in and told them the story and said, we are organizing a town meeting and we're inviting our water district superintendent to answer some questions, because we had lots of questions. And, of course, the media, they know me through the peace activism, so they were very good to me. And we had excellent press with titles saying, Maine Water Battle Begins. So it garnered the attention of the town, and we had a town hall meeting that was packed. Absolutely packed. People were standing, sitting on a stage, everywhere. And people stood in line for 3 hours to ask questions to the water district. And it appeared that about 100% of the people were absolutely opposed to the deal. So to make a long story short, even though the community was opposed to the contract, the water district was not really listening to us. They had called for a public their own public meeting to answer comments on the day that they were going to sign the contract at the end of June. So we got PBS NewsHour interested in the story. PBS and all the media showed up, called for a press conference. The press conference turned into a protest because the water district, seemingly embarrassed by the fact that PBS showed up, decided they weren't going to have this town meeting in the big hall where all the public could attend. They were going to have it in a little room in their water district where, of course, because of fire regulations, the public could not really attend. So it was all media, and I think we had five of our own people in there to ask questions of the water district superintendent and the trustees. And if people were angry, the citizens were banging on the window, and of course PBS caught all this, and when they aired their segment showing how the community was enraged and that the community were not a bunch of radicals as Nestle had portrayed us in the media, or were trying to portray us as a bunch of radicals and outsiders. You could see clearly that this was middle-aged, elderly people really, really angry that the democratic process had been denied to them. So what happened is the contract was postponed, and then when the PBS segment aired, the contract was indefinitely tabled. However, we knew that Nestle was not going to go away because, you know, there would be billions and billions of dollars over the life of the contract. So it's not something that they were going to walk away from. So we have organized in our community to write a rights-based ordinance. And we've been working with an attorney, Thomas Lindsay, who's from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And they have been incredible to help us construct the language for our new rights-based ordinance that people will be voting on soon. Now, at the same time, Nestle was also waging an attack on a neighboring town in Shapley. Both our communities have really prized aquifers. They're very unpolluted. They're sand and gravel aquifers. So it's something that Nestle really wants to get their hands on. So Shapley then started working with the Thomas Lindsay team and wrote a rights-based ordinance. But, of course, the town selectmen were in bed with Nestle. They thought selling the water to Nestle was a great idea, even though they were only getting paid 0.6 of a cent per gallon. So they were not listening to us as well. So what we did is we collected signatures and we got a special town meeting. And in spite of the fact that Nestle spent thousands and thousands of dollars, they even hired so-called representatives to go door to door and talk about what good neighbors they are and that they're really a local business, you know, all the propaganda. But you know what? People are not that stupid. And the community organizers actually did a fantastic job of educating the community about the real issue, and not just about the water, but the fact that the corporations in Maine have been basically exceeding their authority. And certainly in the case of Southern Maine with the water, they were going to really usurp our ability to have any control over our water resources.
You know, the way the system works, whether it's locally, regionally, nationally, the big corporations spend many, many millions of dollars essentially bribing the politicians. You know, they make contributions to their political campaigns. It's nothing but a bribe. And who knows, and the law, I think, is written, I don't know how it is locally around the country, but the politicians can put this money away and use it for other purposes. The details of the law I'm really not certain about, but there are lots of different things that the politicians can do with this money, and they do. And for a corporation to say we are a good citizen, well, my goodness, a good citizen, my foot. They write contracts like what they try to do to you in Maine, Jamila, that would be the equivalent of writing a contract with a bank to say, now give us the key to your vault and give us freedom to go in there and take anything out of it that we want.
Absolutely.
And you know, I mean, we'll think about maybe there's something we want to do for you, but we won't promise you anything. But we just want to clean out your vault. That's the kind of contract they wanted your towns to sign. But go ahead.
Yeah. It was a shameful contract, and it was a businesswoman, it certainly was an embarrassment to the town that we would have such a contract that totally favored the corporation over the citizens. But we were able to expose that, and that's certainly helped our case. In Shapley, on the 28th, they just voted for a race-based ordinance. Now, in Maine, we have what's called home rule. However, you know, that information has been very suppressed. Of course, corporations do not want people to know they have any power or any authority. But our Article 1 of our Maine Constitution does say that all power is inherent to the people. And all free governments are founded in their authority and instituted for the benefit of the people. So we were able to take that that language and put that into our ordinance. And because we did such a great job of educating the public, people understood that this is what they needed to do to keep the corporations out. Regulatory law is basically written by lobbyists, corporate lobbyists. They will not protect the people. They only regulate, try to regulate, but they do not prevent harms.
Oh, indeed, Jamila, we need to take another break. I don't think I need to tell you that law or no law, you need to remain eternally vigilant because these people are very devious and they'll try to figure out ways around your law.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to NewsHour. I'm on with Jamila El Shafi. We're talking about how three small towns in Maine fought and defeated the Nestle Corporation to save the water that belongs to the community, not a predatory corporation that wants to steal it. Jamila, let me mention one thing. I have a new article I'll send out tomorrow, and in it I talk about how a growing number of states in the country are getting a little more assertive about their 10th Amendment rights. And the 10th Amendment states that all rights in the Constitution that aren't authorized to the federal government belong to the states. And what really has built this movement, and with states writing laws to the effect on this, is growing anger at the state level, regional, local level, over the terribly calamitous economic crisis that people in various states blame on Washington. And indeed, they're right. This crisis was manufactured in Washington, complicit with Wall Street, never should have happened, but it did. It truly is a catastrophe, an absolute catastrophe, getting worse all the time. And the policy coming out of Washington is making it worse, not better. That's a separate story. But it's building anger at the grassroots, blaming the central government, but literally causing misery at the local level. And some states are acting to write laws asserting their 10th Amendment rights like they haven't done it before.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a very growing movement. People have reached a tipping point. They've had enough. And, you know, for the longest time, I think there's been a devolution of democracy. People have not gotten very involved as citizens. And that is changing because, you know, we're living in a wake-up call right now, as you just said, with the economic crisis in this country. And people are starting to realize that they do have power. As I said before, it's been suppressed. The corporations don't want us to know we have power, but we do. And all but six states in our country has a municipal home rule, which gives communities a lot of power if they would actually look into it and start exercising that power. As you know, because you've written some fantastic articles about, you know, corporate personhood, I think one of the major movements that is coming about is a movement to abolish the status of corporate personhood. And I think there's not a better expert than you to talk about that, but it is very significant and it's growing.
Not an expert, Jamila, but I have written about it. In the second half of the program, I'll begin and I'll explain exactly what corporate personhood is and how we got it. It really is. It's an ugly story. It's the way things work. A typical backroom deal. The kind of stuff that happens and nobody knows about it till it's too late. Whether it's establishing the Federal Reserve, this banking cartel disguising it, masquerading as a government agency, or whether it's corporate personhood that corporations were salivating about back in the 19th century and finally got. And let me tell you one thing. We'll have a break at bottom of the hour. You'll love this, Jamila. Venezuela is a very important country to me because they really do have democracy down there under Hugo Chavez. And news this morning is that this is terrific. The government in the capital, Caracas, is making a Coca-Cola bottler. You know they steal water too. Is making a Coca-Cola bottler move, relocate. They're not putting them out of business. They're making them relocate to make room for housing for the poor. Now just imagine that happening in the U.S.
Well, hopefully someday that will happen. We'll make it happen. But, it's an inspiring story about the, democracy in Venezuela or places like Bolivia where they threw out Bechtel, who was trying to control the water there.
Oh, so Cochabamba, absolutely. Well, the people did that. The government didn't do it. The people did it.
Yeah, the people did it. That's right. And this is all coming from the people because, as we know, power doesn't give out anything without a demand.
Absolutely.
So the people are demanding, and I think what's exciting is that this is a broad movement. It's happening in many communities across the country, but there is now basically a coalition that is forming. Right now it's pretty loose, but where people are really reaching out to other communities, other states, to learn what they are doing to fight corporations. So that's really helping quite a bit in the educational process with the communities at large, to know that it's not just Shapley, Maine, or Kennebunk that's fighting it, Nestle, or companies like Nestle. It's McLeod, California. It's, in Florida, all over. I mean, corporations have had so much power, and I think we're taking it back, and we're going to do it one community at a time.
I have nothing against corporations, Jamila. As long as they're small and local and they're not predatory.
Absolutely.
When they get big and global and they exploit people, because profits come first and people simply don't matter at all. People are to be used to make a profit. That's not the kind of system that I consider very friendly. That's the system we need to beat and defeat and replace it with something that puts people first and everything else after people needs.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
But we need to take another break. We'll come back and I'll explain what corporate personhood is and how important it is to get rid of it.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Shafi. We're talking about the battle of three small towns in Maine to save their water. And let's talk a little bit about corporate personhood because they defeated that in their local area as well. And this is a battle that we need to inspire people all over the country to take on. It is so big. Let me backtrack a little bit. Corporate personhood came about in the late 19th century. But back when the Constitution was put together and the Bill of Rights, Constitution was 1787. We got the Bill of Rights in 1791. Neither one were given to us as a gift from the founders to the people. It was a gift by them to themselves. But when we got the Ten Amendments, the Bill of Rights, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison wanted 12 Bill of Rights amendments, not 10. Madison was in Philadelphia in 1787. Jefferson was not. He was the ambassador to France at the time. Jefferson came back. Against them were John Adams and Alexander Hamilton. 1787, Adams was the ambassador to England. Hamilton was our first Secretary of the Treasury. So he was the Paulson or Geithner of his day, and just as conservative. Probably a lot more competent, but just as conservative. And the battle was this. Jefferson and Madison wanted amendments that gave us freedom from monopolies in commerce. In other words, giant corporations. And the second one was freedom from a permanent military, or in other words, standing armies. George Washington warned about standing armies. Well, sadly, Adams and Hamilton won, Jefferson and Madison lost, and here we are today. Well, fast forward, and go up to 1886. A Supreme Court decision that had nothing to do with corporate personhood. 1886, the case was Santa Clara County, California, versus Southern Pacific Railway, went to the Supreme Court. And what was it? It was a simple tax dispute. The Supreme Court didn't rule on corporate personhood, but in the decision about the tax issue, a man by the name of J.C. Bancroft Davis, he was the court's reporter. Doesn't sound like very much, but the job was a very powerful job on the court. He wrote in his head notes in the decision granting corporate personhood. The justices knew what he did. They did nothing to change what he did. Oh, it probably was a plot. Why they picked this case, who knows, but they did. They couldn't bring this issue. Apparently, it was just too inflammatory to actually bring it in a case, for corporations to bring it in a case and say, we want corporate personhood and give it a fancy name and get the Supreme Court to say, ah, yes, you're a corporation. You're certainly not a person, but we will give you corporate personhood, which relates to, I believe, the 14th Amendment of the Constitution that several amendments that freed the slaves gave them rights and so on. Well, corporate personhood amounts to this. It changed everything. It gave corporations the same constitutional rights as people. They're not people. They're companies. But they got, for the first time, they got what they dreamed of, the same rights as people. But because of their limited liability status, protecting shareholders from the obligations of their debts and other obligations and so on, other responsibilities, they got the rights, but not the responsibilities to go with them. We have the rights, supposedly. We really don't anymore. But in theory, we have the rights, but we also have the responsibilities.
Yes, interestingly enough, you know, when blacks had no rights, women had no rights, but yet an entity created by human beings suddenly got more rights than us.
Oh, absolutely.
No, that, of course,
it
was a terrible mistake that we are regretting today and living the consequences.
Oh, absolutely. Well, out of the Constitution, Jamila, only 15% of the population could vote. Of course, blacks were property. They were commodities, not people. And women didn't get the vote until about 1920. So it wasn't exactly a piece of democracy that they created in Philadelphia back then. And I wrote about it because it was a wonderful book, which is another story entirely. But the book basically described the founding fathers in today's language as a Wall Street crowd. The same kind of people, politicians, bankers, lawyers, you know, the same kind of people we put up with today to cause you all this trouble, to write the laws to let Nestle steal your water. But anyway, think about corporations. They're not human. They can live forever. They can change their identity. They can reside in many places at the same time, in many countries, in many communities. Whatever they do wrong, they can't be imprisoned. They can change themselves into new entities for any reason at any time. And again, they have the same rights under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as people, but not the responsibilities. And they got this because a court reporter wrote it up in a set of head notes, and the Supreme Court said, okay, incorporate. Everything changed for corporations after that. It literally changed the rules of the game and set us down the path that we're on now that gives corporations the license to basically go do anything they damn please. And it doesn't really matter whether they're based in Switzerland, wherever Nestle is based, somewhere overseas. Switzerland, I believe. Aren't they based in Switzerland?
Yes, they are. They are.
Well, I mean, they're all
global. Switzerland, Nestle Waters is based out of Connecticut, I believe, but the parent company is based out of Switzerland.
Oh, yeah, they have divisions that could be home-based in all sorts of places. But, of course, it doesn't matter where they're home-based, just like U.S. corporations. They're global in operations. So their market is the planet, is the world, and they want to plunder it equally, no matter where they work, because they want to sell everywhere. They want to do business everywhere. They want to steal resources everywhere, whether it's water, whether it's oil, whether it's copper, tin, whatever it is, gold. They want license to go get it and virtually get it either free or as close to it as possible.
That's right. That's why it's our duty to stop them. And I don't think that's going to happen at the federal level. I think it has to be done community by community. In Maine, we actually have written, as I said, a home rule in the Constitution. However, the propaganda is that Dillon's rules, that municipalities are subordinate to the state to the federal, and then, of course, with multinationals, you have the trade and investment treaties, which give them enormous power. So, for example, if Nestle does some harm, say depleting an aquifer, for example, in Maine, which would be a horrible situation, we could not stop their, we could not end the contract with them, or they could sue us under the trade and investment treaties for harming their ability to make a profit. So, They're so powerful, and we do have to work, and I do believe it's got to be done at the local level. Maine, we have now 14 bills before the Maine state legislature, and we have those bills because we have stirred up such a ruckus in Maine about the water issue, and, you know, politicians always follow. They never lead, so the people have spoken, and they're pretending to listen. I think some of them are sincere. However, are they going to pass? I doubt it. I would like to dream that that would be possible, but like with any great struggle, women's right to vote, or, you know, freeing the slaves, anything, it takes years and years of struggle. So I think we're just at the beginning of this, but I do believe ultimately people will take back the power. And it has to start with the individual acting as if they have the power, and then inspiring their community to act like they've got power and start using their the rights granted in their state constitutions. And as I said, most states have that in their constitution. People just don't know it, and they don't, therefore they don't use it if they don't know it exists.
Well, there's no question that action has to be at the grassroots level, and when there's enough of it, Jamila, it's amazing what can be accomplished. I've talked about on this program and written a little about that we've achieved people, ordinary people like you, like me, like the ones listening to this program, with enough effort over enough time, have achieved extraordinary victories. We ended slavery in this country. At one time was thought to be impossible to do, but it was done. We got the civil rights movement. We got the labor movement. We've had some wonderful things happen. But when people go to sleep and they don't realize that they can do things and they don't pay enough attention to the harm their own government is causing them to enrich corporations and waging wars as part of it, they are the ones who end up getting hurt. So we need to get energized and to do this. It's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, and you're doing it. And it's a marvelous feeling that we get, Jamila, that, my goodness, I mean, we can take on these powerful figures, corporations, whatever, and we can beat them at their own game. And we don't have a team of lawyers, and we don't have multi-millions of dollars to spend. It just plain elbow grease, hard work, and enough dedicated people.
I know your well, in your article, Hostile Takeover, you know, you quoted activist Saul Alinowicz, the way to beat organized money is with organized people.
Oh, it's a great quote. Oh,
it's a wonderful, inspiring quote. It's true. It's true. And in Maine, we've done a superb job of organizing and mobilizing the grassroots and educating them. I mean, Nestle wasn't fearful that that would pass. They could not imagine. Even the local papers did not imagine that people would actually understand the issue about personhood, or that they would vote to strip that privilege away from corporations. We're talking about, you know, a lot of simple, hardworking folks that have not had a lot of education about this, and yet when presented with the truth, you know, they have made the right decision. And I think it's been quite the shock to the Nestle Corporation, because they certainly have more than the usual amount of lobbyists running around Augusta these days.
Oh, indeed. So let me pass on another piece of news to you. It's, although I consider this small stuff compared to the big boys like Nestle, but a man we know well now, Bernie Madoff, he pleaded guilty to 11 counts today in court of defrauding people of $50 billion, whatever the number is. His bail, I'm looking at a New York Times piece that just came out on it, a brief account. The judge said he has incentive to flee, he has the means to flee, and thus he presents the risk of flight. Bail is revoked. Now, I didn't spot easily in this article that he's going to jail, but if bail is revoked, I assume you're going to haul him off. But I want to see that in writing. I want to see a headline. Madoff heads to the pokey or something to that effect. But he's small fry. He really is small fry. I mean, he may have defrauded people out of $50 billion. The Wall Street bankers are defrauding all of us out of many, many trillions of dollars. And I've seen numbers that run from $9 to $11 trillion. But they didn't go in and steal it. Our government is handing it to them. Our money, our future, and they're going to strip benefits away from us to pay for it. A little bit now, a lot more later. And unless we get this money back, generations of ordinary people will be paying for the greatest theft in human history. It literally makes Bernie Madoff look like a pickpocket.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead, Jamila. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that people really have to get mobilized on this. You know, their legislators need to hear it from us. We need to be going down to Wall Street and, organizing sit-ins. I know there's an action coming up at the beginning of April where people are going to Wall Street for 2 days, Friday and Saturday, I think the 3rd and the 4th. But we need to be doing this all the time. You know, we really, really need citizen action, sit-ins, boycotts of product, whatever it takes, because just by doing nothing and complaining about, getting angry when you're watching the TV and the news reports come out about AIG or such, we've got to change that. We've got to change and become involved citizens.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
I missed this. I went down and read the article. I didn't read the headline. The headline to the article about Madoff is, my goodness, I usually read headlines in the article, but I wanted to see the copy very quickly. The headline is, Madoff is jailed after pleading guilty. But the article doesn't say that. Pleading guilty. Well,
that's very telling.
Now, what happens from here, I have no idea. We can be sure he will not end up in Sing Sing. In other words, hot time in a real bad place to be. But they really ought to put him in one of those Supermax prisons where they lock him in a room without a window and he has no human contact except some guy that shoves his inedible food through a little slit in the vent. And over time, you go crazy after you've been in there for so long. But that's another story. I want the Wall Street bankers dealt with.
Oh, my God. Well, in my community, I live not far from the Bushes.
Oh, indeed. Well, George Bush Sr. has a home in Kennebunkport, Maine.
That's right. And also, the CEO of J.P. Morgan has just built a home. It took Carpenters 2 years to build this enormous mansion. The guy is only there 2 or 3 weeks at the most, a year. It's probably one of his half dozen homes. And here we're bailing out J.P. Morgan. It makes me so angry.
Oh, it makes me angry, too. You're talking about Jamie Dimon.
Yes, Jamie Dimon lives here. I mean, we've got a lot of oil people here in the summer, a lot of military industrial complex, because birds of a feather flock together. And it just really, really gets to me. I have organized protests in their neighborhood, and they'll say, go home, you know, get out of here. You're polluting the neighborhood. And I said, very funny coming from you.
Oh, well, make life very uncomfortable for them, Jamila.
It's been my mission the past 8 years or so has been disturbing their comfort in the summer, because I don't believe that the people like the Bush family, who started wars for profit, should be having a vacation and eating lobster and drinking fine wine while people are being killed.
We need to do that, Jamila. They're criminals. They should be dealt with like criminals, but we'll be right back. Welcome back. Final brief segment. Jamila, see how fast the hour goes.
It certainly does.
It evaporates. It just literally evaporates. And there are always more things on our minds that we'd love to talk about. I want to say this to you. I'm really so thrilled about your victory. I hope you'll stay in contact with me. And if more things develop that take this story to another level, whatever may happen, please let me know, and we'll go back on the air again and share it with listeners. So we'll keep this issue alive, and let people know that they can do the same thing that you did. Why not? And if you can do it, go ahead.
And I would like to invite people to view our website, which is soh2o.org. On the website, under the legislation tab, there are the ordinances that we've passed. People should take a look at them and consider it. Organizing in their community. And the best way to do this is preemptively, before the corporation, before Walmart moves in, before the sludge industry moves in to dump their biosolids and all these other different things. People should start doing this right now, in community by community. I really believe that we will win the struggle in the end to take back, you know, our power as people, as communities, away from the corporation.
Jamila, can they also access information by going to Save Our Water?
Yes, Save Our Water. The SOH2O website has a lot of information. I would also refer people to the Community Environmental Legal Defense website, which is celdf.org. And wonderful people. The lawyers there are working in the business to help you. They don't charge for their service. But it's available, and people really should take advantage of that, as I said, preemptively.
A simple way to find you, which is what I often do, is simply Google Save Our Water or Save Our Water website, and it'll take me right to your site.
Oh, good. Great to know that. Yeah, I'd love to have people come take a look and learn about our struggle. Hopefully there's information there that will be instructive, our successes, and maybe some things that we could have done better with our struggle. But I certainly invite people to contact me as well. I'm very happy to talk about that. And also want to let people know that Maine Activists will be in an upcoming documentary that will be out in early summer, and it's called Tapped, T-A-P-P-E-D, and it features Mainers, because we really are, you know, at the vanguard of two movements, really. One is the fight for water as a human right, but also the fight for local democratic control.
Indeed. And we were all out of time, Jamila. I'll add one more thing. My email address is on the bottom of all my articles, and all my articles are on globalresearch.ca. If listeners missed what you told them on how to find you, email me, and I'll put any listener in contact with you, Jamila.
Thank you.
And I thank you for coming on. This was a wonderful hour, a really inspiring hour. Again, ordinary people can literally move mountains. It's an incredible story, and we need to move a lot of mountains ahead.
The
struggle is a big one going forward, but it's a vital one to win because it's either us or them, and they want to chew us up to get more for themselves, and we need to stop them. Jamila, I hope we can do
that.
I hope you'll tell me about more things, exciting things ahead, and then you come on back on, and we'll talk about it to listeners.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you inviting me to your show. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jamila. Tomorrow we'll have an archive repeat, and then back to live programs next week. Oh, I believe we have a full Monday through Friday live schedule next week. So please join us then, and we'll be back.